Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of X-Men Unraveled. I'm Noelle, and today I'm venturing away from the X-Men to cover the Eternals, whose movie finally comes out this week. I don't know about you all, but I have been waiting impatiently for this one. I love the new and different directions that the MCU has taken, especially since Endgame, and this movie is definitely brand new territory. It's really cool to see less well-known characters make their way to the big screen, and they have an amazing cast for the Eternals, from my all-time fave Angelina Jolie to Salma Hayek and Kumail Nanjiani, and it's directed by an Academy Award winner, Chloe Zhao, which is amazing and really shows how far the superhero movies that get maligned by quote-unquote intellectuals are really growing thanks to the overall success of the MCU. Reviews have been sketchy so far, but honestly, none of the negatives that I've read have made me any less excited for the movie. They've mostly been about how big the story is, which to me is a plus. The stories of most Marvel characters are too big for one movie. And some of the pitfalls that I think a lot of the film adaptations fall into is cutting material to fit an acceptable runtime for a single movie. So if this film is all about setting the foundation of who these characters are going forward, that's enough for me. Of course, I say all this before I've seen the movie, so I could still end up disappointed, but I'm willing to take my chances. So I wanted to take this episode to go over the history of the Eternals and who they are in the comics. I personally always like to know the comic backstory of characters before seeing them on the screen, so I thought this would be a fun tangent for the podcast, even though it's not X-Men related. So let's get into who the Eternals are in the comics. The Eternals made their debut in Marvel Comics in 1976 in Eternals number 1. They were created by Jack Kirby when he returned to Marvel from a stint at DC. Kirby's writing took on cosmic and mythological themes, which he continued with the Eternals. The cover of Eternals number 1 drives home the fact that this was brand new direction and story for the comics. The tagline says, "First issue, the start of Jack Kirby's long-awaited cosmic series." And one of the characters announces, "Look to the stars, the gods are coming back." The issue opens with three individuals coming across a giant ancient machine, which had been lost to time in the Andes Mountains. When we meet the characters, we learn that they are archaeologist Dr. Damien, his daughter Margot, who is also an archaeologist, and Ike Harris, a cameraman who's recording their explorations. And they are exploring a vast chamber full of evidence of what they call outer space technology. Ike announces to the others that this is evidence of, quote, divergent human history, meaning that humans shared the world with other humanoid life forms. Ike's two colleagues are pretty skeptical about his claims, but then Ike starts searching around the chamber for some specific artifact that he says will call the gods back to Earth. And Dr. Damien and Margot realize that Ike knows a little more than he's let on and ask him to tell them who he really is and what he knows. So Ike reveals that his real name is Icarus, and the technology they found is the result of gods coming to Earth millennia ago. The gods altered the genetic makeup of early humans, which led to the rise of the Deviants and Eternals, two races that live in opposition to each other. He describes the Deviants as, quote, "an ever-changing and constant failure. Structurally unstable, each new generation of Deviant appeared in new and monstrous ways." In contrast, the Eternals, he says, were more like the gods. They were bred few in number and were immune to time and death. And similar to the gods that altered their genetics, they lived apart from other living beings. And Icarus says that using the technology they found, he can call the gods that created the Deviants and Eternals back to Earth. But while Icarus and the archaeologists are making these discoveries, the Deviants are on their way to the chamber as well. Unlike Icarus, the Deviants hate the gods and want to stop their return. When the Deviants arrive, they attack the three explorers, and Icarus fights back with his powers, shooting power beams from his eyes. But then the Deviants have what they call a shroud gun, and basically it shoots out a fancy blanket made out of some material that can stop Icarus's attacks, and it just covers him from head to foot. But Dr. Damien has a gun and holds the Deviants back, while Margo helps get Icarus out from under the blanket. Just then, an enormous spaceship lands nearby, and everyone watches it arrive. The issue ends and reveals the title of the next one, Celestials from Space. Celestials being the gods referred to throughout the issue. So that is how the Eternals are first introduced to the Marvel world, but where they came from and what they've done over the millennia is told in various stories over the years of the comics. Kirby's idea was obviously quite ambitious, introducing an entirely new storyline into the comics that spans thousands and thousands of years. So let's get into how it all comes together. I covered the background of the Celestials, Deviants, and Eternals back in the first Namor episode. But since my main focus at that time was Atlantis, I think it's worth covering again here for an explanation of the Eternals themselves. It's a lot of Marvel mythology, and I know that for me, a recap never really hurts, but if you did listen to the Namor episode, this will sound familiar. So in Ultimates 2, number 6 from 2017, we learn that back when the universe first began, there only existed the first firmament. Essentially, this is the sentient incarnation of the first universe. And the firmament existed alone for an unknown or unknowable period of time. And eventually, the firmament got lonely. So it created new beings to join it in existence, which it later came to see as a huge mistake. The beings it created were the Aspirants and the Celestials. They basically look like giant human-shaped machines whose faces look like helmets. And the Aspirants and Celestials basically look the same, but they are different colors. So the Aspirants are black and the Celestials are multicolored. The Aspirants loyally served the first firmament and followed its bidding. They followed the order established by the firmament and maintained the status quo that it set. They also created their own new beings, and together they all continued to serve the firmament's intentions. But the Celestials had their own goals, and ultimately rebelled against their creator. They gave life to new beings, and rather than follow what the firmament wanted, the Celestials wanted their creations to evolve. And ultimately, they wanted the universe, or the first firmament, to evolve and experience mortality itself. In the comic, the firmament says that this was madness and sacrilege. It was war. Which, honestly, I get, because you're lonely and give life to new beings, and then they grow up and start talking about your death. Kind of not cool overall. So the Aspirants, who are working to maintain the integrity of the first firmament, went to war with the Celestials. But the Celestials used a superpowered weapon that ended up shattering the firmament into pieces, and each piece formed its own new, unique universe. Collectively, these new universes were called the Second Cosmos, which is a multiverse where the Marvel world exists. The first firmament wasn't entirely destroyed, but it had to flee to the remotest edge of existence, and it kept the surviving Aspirants with it. But the Celestials had won dominion over the Second Cosmos, and they set about bringing their vision to life. They colonized the new worlds that were created, and they started new life wherever they went. And that new life experienced evolution and mortality as they originally wanted. And eventually, the Celestials came to Earth. When the Celestials arrive on a planet, it marks the beginning of a process where they alter, test, and judge a species. Each arrival of the Celestials is called a host. The first host is when the Celestials arrive on a planet and alter the genetic makeup of the dominant species. In the case of Earth, this was humans, and when the first host arrived approximately 1 million years ago, a few Celestials altered the genes of early humans. Two Celestials called Gamennon the Gatherer and Zirin the Tester conducted experiments that led to the creation of 100 Deviants. And just as a side note, the name Deviants is actually what the Eternals eventually called them. Their own name for themselves is the Changing People. but deviance is what sticks, so for simplicity's sake, I will continue to use that. Each deviant is unique in appearance, and physical characteristics are not passed down in generations. Eternals number 1 from 2006 describes the deviants by saying that each new deviant is a, quote, new roll of the genetic dice. So everyone is different, they have different powers, you never know what you're going to get. Generally, the deviants are not pretty characters, they usually have strange appearances, and other characters often refer to them as ugly or grotesque, which just seems mean, but in comic world it makes them easier to dislike or turn into villains because of how they look. Deviants are also individually unique in the powers they manifest. Another celestial from the first host named Nazar the Calculator created 100 Eternals through his experiments on early humans. In contrast to the deviants, Eternals are usually described as beautiful. They look pretty much just like humans. They also don't reproduce, and when an Eternal dies, they are reincarnated. However, early on in their appearances in the comics, it seems like they could reproduce, and many Eternals are referred to as someone else's son or daughter. But as time went on, writers established the idea that 100 Eternals were created and their number doesn't change. Eternals have a wide array of powers, and Marvel.com sums them all up. It says, all Eternals possess the capacity for superhuman strength, telepathy, flight, teleportation, illusion casting, transmutation of organic and inorganic matter, and the generation of various forms of energy from their bodies, including force, heat, light, and other electromagnetic radiation. So, pretty powerful beings. But the comics have elaborated on this idea and say that each Eternal can also choose to specialize in a specific power or powers at the expense of the others. So as time goes on, each Eternal develops their powers in a unique way. And finally, the last celestial enhancement of the human race was carried out by Oneg the Prober, who added the X gene into the genetic makeup of average humans, leading to the rise of mutants like the X-Men. After their creation, the Eternals formed into two factions, one led by an Eternal named Kronos, and the other group following Uranos. What If number 24 from 1977 includes a section titled Untold Tales of the Marvel Universe. The story in this issue tells how the Eternals banded together to create a city in what is now the Northern Territories of Canada called Titanos. But after they completed their city, Kronos and Uranos disagreed about the role Eternals should play on Earth. Uranos wanted to harness their power and conquer the world. But Kronos wanted to study the world and live peacefully. When they couldn't agree, the two leaders gathered support from other Eternals, which ultimately led to a civil war to determine the future of their species. And this happened about 500,000 years ago. Numerous Eternals died in the war, and their city of Titanos was destroyed. But the Eternals have a device called the Activation Chamber, or sometimes Reactivation Chamber, that essentially resurrects them anytime their bodies are destroyed. So those that died in the war were not gone forever. There's only 100 of them, so it would have been a pretty quick war if they didn't have that ability. The war finally ended when Kronos and Uranos faced each other in single combat. Kronos emerged the victor, and Uranos and his followers were banished to the planet Uranus. Later, they end up relocating and living on Saturn's moon Titan. With their victory, Kronos and his followers set about studying the world and the makeup of the Eternals. And Kronos, in his work, managed to isolate the cosmic life force that gave the Eternals their power. He called it the essence of immortality. But when he tried to contain the force in like a metal capsule, it caused an enormous explosion that once again destroyed the city of Titanos. However, another result of Kronos' experiment was that the Eternals gained greater powers and immortality. Once again, the Eternals had to rebuild their city and society, but this time their leader was gone. He was killed in the explosion and turned into an incorporeal entity. So Kronos' sons, again, this is where it gets confusing because later on in stories, Eternals don't reproduce, but at this point they're his sons. Zuras and Alars gathered the Eternals and announced what had happened. They said that all of the Eternals needed to come together and decide on their next ruler. So the Eternals have this ritual where they form a circle and all fly around together And it results in the Eternals combining their energy and minds into a single being called the Unimind. It's a little strange, but it allows them to basically form a single unified mind. And the decision that they came to in the Unimind was that Zuras would take up the mantle of leadership. In response, Alarz announces that he will leave because he and Zuras disagree about the future of their species, and he wants to avoid the possibility of another civil war in the future. The core of the brothers' disagreement is that Zuras believes that they should not try to increase the number of Eternals, but Alarz wanted to figure out how to bring more Eternals into existence. Alarz goes to Titan with the other banished Eternals and changes his name to Mentor. And eventually he had two sons with another Eternal named Sui San. One of them was Thanos, so maybe Zuras was right that Eternals having kids was a bad idea. After the Unimind's decision, Zuras's plan to keep the number of Eternals static becomes the policy of the Eternals on Earth. Another decision he made was for the Eternals to build a new city called Olympia in Greece. They've been in the polar mountains of Canada until now, so seems like a better choice if you ask me, but I hate the cold. Some Eternals did leave and make homes in other areas of the world, but they're still loyal to the Society of Olympia and Zuras' leadership, so they're not contentious exiles or anything like that. While the Eternals had been going through civil war, rebuilding, and gaining new abilities, the Deviants had been amassing their own power and conquering more and more of Earth. Initially, after their creation, they lived in caves and kept to themselves. But unlike the Eternals, the Deviants are able to reproduce, and eventually there were millions of them. They expanded throughout the world and built a capital city called Lemuria on an island in the Pacific Ocean. And the Deviants would go on to develop new technologies, conquer new lands, and enslave humans. Eternals number 1 from 2006 says that the Eternals left the Deviants alone until the Deviants didn't leave them alone. But with only 100 Eternals against millions of Deviants, the Eternals struggled to push back the Deviant conquest. So the Eternals called the Celestials back to Earth. And the Deviants know exactly who the Celestials are, but by this time they had completely turned against their creators. So the Deviants fought against the Celestial invasion, but given the size and power of the Celestials, the Deviants didn't really stand much of a chance. Ultimately, the Celestials used a weapon of mass destruction against the Deviants, destroying their island Lemuria and reducing their numbers to a few thousand. This also had huge ramifications around the world, including sinking Atlantis and causing lots of other shifts in oceans and lands. After this, though, the Deviants were never able to rebuild to the level of their previous power. This arrival by the Celestials is called the Second Host, which is marked by wrath and discipline. Basically, the Celestials come back, check on their creations, and they were not happy with the course that one of their creations took, so they corrected it, wrathfully. Eternals number 6 goes on to tell how, with the threat of the Deviants ended, the Eternals began to help and encourage advancements among humans. They taught farming, metalworking, and writing. And a lot of this gets really sketchy because it's taking a lot of agency from ancient civilizations. It's a little problematic, but that's the story. The Eternals were often either worshipped as gods themselves or conflated with existing human myths, and so they joined kind of a pantheon to early humans. In Greece, the Olympian gods, who really exist, and the Eternals actually worked together. Often the Eternals would go among humans and act as representatives of the Olympians. One of these was the Eternal Athena, who was similar to the Olympian Athena. Originally, Athena's name was Azura, but she changed it to Athena to fit her role as Athena's representative. In South America, an Eternal known as Viraco took on the identities of the gods Kukulcan to the Maya and Quetzalcoatl to the Aztecs. And the Eternals built another city in South America called Celestia. Viraco also met Thor shortly after moving to South America. When Thor came to Earth, originally to conquer it for Asgard in Thor Annual Number 7, Thor ended up allying with the Eternals rather than trying to fight them. However, after a battle with a creation of the Deviants called Dromedain, Thor was sent away and his memories of the Eternals were erased. This happened because the Celestials arrived for their third host. And this host is meant to allow the Celestials' creations to continue to progress without influence from other worlds or dimensions, such as Asgardians like Thor. And at this time, one of the Eternals named Ajak was chosen as sort of a conduit between the Eternals and Celestials. He was left in the Andes in a sort of suspended animation until much later Icarus, Margo, and Dr. Damian arrive in Eternals number 1. At that point, Ajak acted as a beacon to bring the Celestials back to Earth for the fourth host, which would finally judge the beings of Earth as worthy or not. Not going to get into the details of that one, but ultimately Earth's beings were judged worthy and allowed to continue their existence. There is more to the Eternal stories after this, including an encounter with Dark Celestials, other Marvel villains and heroes, and a mind wipe carried out by the Eternal known as Sprite. But I'm going to end the story there for today because all of that would not fit into a single episode, and I do have to get back to the X-Men. But in general, over the next several thousand years, the Eternals mainly keep to themselves, sometimes engaging with humans, sometimes being worshipped by them for it. But they don't really come into contact with human society or Marvel heroes until Icarus reveals himself to Dr. Damian and Margo for the fourth host of the Celestials. I was originally going to go over the comic stories of each of the Eternals from the movie, but there are 10 of them, so I realized that would probably be a bit overkill. And they appear to have also changed the stories and backgrounds of several of them in the movie, so it would probably be more confusing than useful anyway. I would definitely recommend looking up the story of any individual Eternal you might be interested in. Most of the stories are told at least in summary online, or you can check out Marvel Unlimited for the comics about them. But I do want to end with two last notes about the Eternals. First, it was recently revealed in the comics that when Eternals are resurrected, they can change their biological sex. So at various times, different Eternals have lived as men or women according to their choice. In the movie, this is true of Ajak, Sprite, and Makari. I think it makes them more interesting, but it also helps even out the number of female characters because since the Eternals showed up in the 1970s, they were mostly dudes. The other facet of the Eternals that I want to mention is the mental toll that their long lives take on them. They can start to mentally deteriorate after living for such significant periods of time, constantly acquiring new experiences or knowledge and facing the traumas of life. And this can result in what's called the Mod Wiry, which I'm probably not saying right, or the Eternal Madness. The only way to cure an Eternal of this is to kill them and resurrect them in the activation chamber. And this brings back a version of the Eternal that is not afflicted with the condition. I also read that joining together in the Unimind can also help the Eternals process their mental trauma and avoid the madness. The Eternal Madness is an interesting facet of these characters. And from what I read, it happens because even though they are so different from humans, their minds are still essentially human. And humans have, what, about 80 years of experience in their life? So the Eternals living for thousands of years, what toll would that take on a human brain? And it does affect several of them in the comics, so I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned that. I hope this episode was helpful to anyone wanting more background on the Eternals from the comics. I love how they're tied to the mythology of the Marvel Universe, as well as myths from places like Greece, Rome, and Latin and South America. And I'm excited to see where the Eternals go in the movies. I cannot wait to see it. A lot of their comic appearances also seem concerned about straightening out their origin and history and characteristics, so I'm sure we'll be getting more comic stories about them as well. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this tangent away from the usual content of this podcast. I'll be back next week with regularly scheduled mutant content. Talk to you next time, and I hope you enjoy the movie when you get to see it.